Speak Up on CJSF 90.1 FM, Burnaby Campus Community Radio from Simon Fraser University, where we broadcast from the unceded ancestral territory of the Halkamilamen Squamish-speaking peoples. I'm Jesse. Thanks for being here. I'm very excited to have you here with me out there listening to my thoughts through the ether. Just very privileged to be able to do this every week and share my music, my thoughts, my conversations, and all of that with you. I couldn't do it without you. It would just be me sitting in this room talking to myself instead of connecting with you. So thanks for tuning in. This week I am away in Toronto, so you're actually hearing past Jesse right here. I'm at a conference for Campus Community Radio, learning all sorts of new ways to improve and expand what we do here at CJSF to better serve you. So thanks for tuning in. Today's episode is, well, there's two separate big things. I'm going to play a cool interview about a combat robot league. Yeah, that's right. And we're going to hear my conversation with Spencer Krug as well. His new album, Same Fangs, comes out next week. So what better time than the present to dive in? There's a lot of talking today, so I don't know that there's going to be all that much music. It might just be a straight hour almost of chats. So thanks again for hanging out. I really do appreciate you allowing me to do this thing that I have been doing for, oh my gosh, 16, 17 years. Yeah, it's been a while, and I'm still going, and I still get to find and share all sorts of cool, interesting things with you, including this. Hey, it's Jesse Wentzloff here on CJSF 90.1 FM Burnaby, presenting a cool interview I did with Tarly Guild, who is the organizer behind Vancouver Combat Robots, which is exactly what it sounds like, is a locally run robot combat league, which is super cool. Tarly, well, you'll hear her story. It's very cool. Put this together for her son. And on the 13th of every month at 6:30, there is a battle bot battle at the Vancouver Hackspace at 1601 Venables in East Vancouver. So the next one coming up, if you're listening to this live on the first broadcast, it will be Wednesday, May 13th. You can check that out at the Van Hackspace. Once again, 1601 Venables Street in East Vancouver. You can go to vanhack.ca, V-A-N-H-A-C-K.ca, for a little more information about the Vancouver Hackspace, which is super cool and facilitates all of this. You can find out more about Vancouver Combat Robots by going to Instagram. Vancouver Combat Robots is the tag. Or if you can't make it to the live event, or if you just want to catch up on past ones, they do live stream the whole thing on YouTube. So you can go to youtube.com/@VanCombatRobots. Anyway, without further ado, here is my conversation about the Vancouver Combat Robots.
I'm Tarly Guild.
I always struggle to, like, I made this BattleBot League, but am I the event organizer or the founder? What do I say?
Well, now's your moment to choose, I suppose.
I am the Empress of Vancouver Combat Robots. No, I basically made this BattleBot League for my son, Oscar. It originally was his 10-year-old birthday party, and I had his friends drive all the bots and whatnot, but I made the enclosure to also fit on the table at Vancouver Hackspace so that we could also do the events here. And since then, it's grown quite a lot. Where the whole room is filled up and we're doing a stream, and it's really, really exciting.
Were you already building robots at that point?
Well, watching BattleBots, we'd find it on YouTube sometimes, and then we were in Las Vegas and there was a BattleBot event, like the BattleBot show. We went to go see them, me, Oscar, and my nephew Donovan. And they got so excited that they let us go backstage and actually meet the engineers and everything. And it was so awesome. But at that point, we knew nothing about how to do bots or anything or even what to ask them. But then Oscar was like, oh, I'd really like to do a birthday party with BattleBots themed. So from that point, I was always like, yeah, let's do it. And then deal with later, like, how do we make it safe, have the enclosure. But because I'm a member at the Vancouver Hackspace, there were people donating the plexiglass I needed for it. And there's bot makers already here. And, like, I'm originally a visual artist, so I have no background in robot making at all. But being here, there's all the circuitry and soldering stations and people coding and doing a lot of robotic stuff. And I've always been intensely curious. So there was a point where I was like, am I going to do this? Because it's very elaborate. I'll have to learn a lot. And there's so many 3D print. We were 3D printing already, but it was sort of a mix of all the worlds combined. So I was just like, hey, let's do it. And I just watched YouTube tutorials. I asked people here. And, well, the worst was ChatGPT is terrible for it. I just end up, like, saying totally the wrong thing. The best thing was YouTube tutorials, because there's a lot of nerds just ready to explain how to do this stuff to you. Mm-hmm. So that's what I was using mostly.
And obviously there's lots of sort of specific technical skills and things that you would have picked up through that in order to be able to build and et cetera, right? But yeah. On sort of maybe a more philosophical or esoteric level, what has this taught you?
You know, I was talking to Metal Janet here, who made the tiny theater on the side of the building. I don't know if you know about it, the Vaudeville Theater. We were talking about, like, why did the little theater and the BattleBot League catch on so easily? Of all the projects we've ever done, I've never had anything so easily catch on with the public. And we're talking about that, like there's something, if you take the absurd seriously, there's something really endearing about that, and it's funny, and I think people just kind of love that. And I don't know, it's just really, we're making meaning out of, like, the most ridiculous things. Like, these little bots have personalities, and we're just going to make a big event based on them. So, and also, it's free. Like, I don't know, as a Vancouverite and a parent, I'm so sick of paying so much money for all the things my kids want to do, and I've showed them everything, but I refuse to, like, make this, like, a $20, $30, $50 event. Like, it's just by donation, and it's also free if you want to make a bot. It's free entry as well, because it does take a lot of time and effort, and hopefully not spending too much money, but there are kits out there that cost a couple hundred dollars. But it's either you could do a bot, take a lot of time, or you could do it really, really cheap. Or, you know, that three-prong thing when you're doing a renovation. You can either have it quick, cheap, or high quality. Yeah. So I have some very tedious, less expensive bots here that work pretty well.
Who is making and controlling, driving the robots or the bots?
Well, we have three or four teams now. Initially, it was all my bots, like the first one that we didn't stream here. It was like the five or six bots that I originally made for the original birthday party. But people were intensely interested, and I still have people, like, working on bots and excited about it. And I'm annoying people around here saying, build a bot, build a bot. So we have Bob Perry. He's made this really amazing, it looks like a crab or something out of the Aliens movie, that spins these wires around on the brushless motors, and it does terrible damage. And he's made other bots too. He's just great out-of-the-box thinker. And he gets the whole thing. Like, we were in a conversation one time, and he was like, oh, this is my dream. And I was like, whoa, he's really into this. And I could see it, because he puts such a huge effort into the bots. And then Eric here, another member here, he made... it's Pigpen. We've had the original Pigpen, number two and number three, and at varying levels of functionality. But last time was really exciting. He had a huge bar spinning around. It was terrifying. And I'm actually pretty proud of him, how he's come so far. He's a talented coder as well. He's made the database website that we use for the brackets. And, well, I have volunteers for my bots. We have the 5 or 6. So I get, like, well, my team is me, my son, Oscar, and my nephew, Donovan. So it's me and a couple 10-year-olds. But we also have friends driving. I have Vlad drive Kerfuffle a few times. He's pretty good at driving it. And also Liz, another member here, she came out of nowhere and just, like, made the best flipper bot from, like, this kit she found. And she wrote a whole article about how she did it and everything. She just shows up. And she won the 1 pound bracket last month. So that was pretty exciting.
It seems like there's a real sort of, like, community element to the whole thing as well.
Yeah, well, that's the hack space. You know, I came here to use the wood shop, expecting it just to be, you know, wood shop. But what ends up happening, you get into conversations with people about their project, and suddenly, you know, you make friends pretty easily. So I was delighted to find that's the hack space doing the community part. And I'm just doing this crazy project, you know, and using the space and everything. It makes it very easy for me. So
I can't imagine, well, many 10-year-olds or many kids in general can say that, like, their mom built 5 robots for their birthday party. do you think that's, like, your son recognizes that?
I like my kids to think, like, we can do things. Like, why not? So it's not like, you know, I don't try to guilt trip around or anything. You're like, oh, don't you appreciate what I'm doing? I think I just, you know, people spend a few $100 on birthday parties. So we just redirected that funding to the robot components, and we just did it in our common room at my co-op. So
cool.
It's fine. It's exciting. And he's at Britannia Elementary, and I think it's a great opportunity for him and some of these other kids to do robotics. They get really into designing them. Sometimes hard to get them into the troubleshooting parts of it, which is a big part, because you call them gremlins when your bot doesn't work and you don't know why and it should work. So they could do a little bit of that in there, and I've had them solder as well. But yeah, their imaginations are explosive, and it's fun talking bots with them.
Well, and cool to be able to sort of direct that creativity into something that is building skills that they'll be able to use in lots of different ways and things in the future, hopefully.
Oh, definitely. Like, the next 100 years, like, we will be interacting with robots, like, any day now. So why not have a Canadian BattleBot League to get them working with these kinds of servo motors and controllers? Like, it's all important things, yeah.
What does the crowd look like when you're doing the events?
We are on a main street, so people do just come in. And, you know, I've yet to survey, like, who are you people? But there's a mix of members, their friends, the children that I've invited down from the school. And, yeah, just people off the street. So it's exciting. We haven't promoted at all, and it fills up in here. So that's exciting. I'm a little nervous, like, how many... We could probably fit maybe 20 more people in, but that's great. I'm thrilled. And it's fun too, like, how nervous I was at the first event and my little microphone, and I was, like, shaking. I have a fear of public speaking. But at this point, I'm just talking to the whole room, like, am I hearing my fear of public speaking? Am I doing this? It's kind of amazing. You know?
Mm-hmm. Another skill to develop at the Van Hack Space, right?
Yeah, for sure. For sure. Yeah, it's really fun.
Do you have a favorite robot?
Okay, well, it might be corrupt that I'm the event organizer and kind of the referee and the announcer, but I do drive Birthday Cake of Doom, which is right here. This is my baby, the big girl right here. She's a 3-pound bot, and her attack is spinning her whole body here like that. And she looks so much like a cake right now. But she didn't do so well last time. I think the 100% PLA infill made it heavier, and so it went a little slower, and she didn't have the attack I wanted. But the month previous to last time, what month was that?
March, April, no, February.
Yeah, February, month. She won the 3-pound bot, much to my delight. Okay, and I try to be fair with the judging. This next one, we actually have prizes, so I'm going to get some people to help me judge so people know it's fair. We have FingerTech Robotics, which is a website that supplies some of the component and weapons. Actually, Game Over's weapon right here, this is a FingerTech bar spinner. They're sponsoring the next event, gave us some gift certificates, so that's really exciting. So I'm going to get some buds to help me judge, so it's fair. Mm-hmm. I can't just let my son win or my nephew as much as they would want to, but I told them, like, if they want to win, they have to make it clear, because if it's ambiguous, it's going to seem unfair if I'm always choosing my guys, you know?
This birthday cake bot, is this one of the originals from the birthday party?
Yes. Oh my god, I remember making this one. It was so hard to fit all the components inside of it, so I ended up just making it huge. I don't know what was going on, but that was the struggle. The struggle is real. Mm-hmm. Fitting all the stuff inside of them is actually pretty hard. And there's certain, you call it wire management, and poor Cravenator I'm showing you right now, like, all the guts spilled out everywhere last BattleBot. And poor Donovan, he was so upset. And I was worried too, because when you got the battery and all these components out, it's like, ooh, that's a lot of expensive components that might get completely smashed. So actually, I'm going to tell the drivers at next BattleBot event to be, if someone should disembowel, if a robot should disembowel, it might be good etiquette to not continue attacking, please, especially the bots that I have personally financed.
Sure. I have to imagine that's also a good lesson in letting go to some extent. And, you know, you're creating this thing and you're putting it into a situation where it probably will be destroyed at some point, right?
You know, I did get a little philosophical about this. There's something cool about destroying something in catharsis. It's almost like you burn something in effigy. It kind of takes some of the tension out somehow, and we're just destroying these silly little bots. And yeah, passions do run pretty high too, especially with the 10-year-old. So I feel like we're learning some resilience as well.
Is there a favorite in terms of, like, favored to win on any given night?
It's hard to say. When I find a new bot, like Eric's bot, I was rooting for him because the previous month it was barely moving. And I feel kind of bad when, like, someone's invested so much time into something and it doesn't work, because I personally know that fear. And, of course, like, I would love my nephew and my son to win, because they really want to. And, you know, I want to win. It's hard for me because I'm participating for that perspective. So I don't know. Is there any favorites among the crowds? You'll have to ask them yourself, I suppose.
Mm-hmm. And you've got the spinner style here. You mentioned a flipper. What are sort of the broad categories or types of bots?
Oh, there's bots I'm still learning about. So a full body spinner. And then there's Game Over is a bar spinner. And it depends if there's a vertical or horizontal orientation. So a very terrifying bot, we don't have one yet, is a vertical spinner where it's basically a saw blade just going towards the victim or opponent. And then you could also have that horizontal. Cravenator's kind of like that. And there's two on here, so it's a double horizontal spinner. And then undercutter. I'm having trouble designing the undercutter spinners because driving them with the blade going near the floor, I haven't been able to make that work. And there's also this really cool one, if you don't want to deal with any wheels. You know what a hex bug is?
No.
So a hex bug is just these little tiny toys, and they vibrate.
Okay.
And the vibration, they have legs that are pointed a certain kind of way, so they move forward. Mm-hmm. So you could technically have a weapon spinning, and the bot is vibrating just because of the movement of that. And then you could have those little legs, and it's a vibrobot. It's vibrating as movement. And I've kind of fantasized about, like, well, how do you control the movement? Maybe you could have a little servo and a rudder on the back and dragging it around. There's actually a weight bonus. Like, you get to have a heavier bot if you have walking legs or shuffling legs, because they take so much more effort to design. that's a really cool incentive too, because then walking bots, I have a soft spot for walking bots because I just want them to happen, but yeah, it takes a lot of work.
What are your hopes for the future of Vancouver Combat Robots?
You know, I'd like my little 10-year-old to grow into a teenager and have this wholesome hobby and take over, because it is a lot of work for me. And I'm like, what am I doing? I'm an artist. I'm like fully managing a BattleBot League. So I'd love this to be like, if he's interested, a project for him. And he seems pretty gung-ho right now, so.
Cool. And for anyone who's interested in getting involved, in getting started with building robots, what advice do you have?
Become a member of the Hackspace. We have everything you need. We'll teach you how to do everything. 3D printing, if you don't know how to do it, to make the body of the bot, we're going to train you. There's soldering stations, laser cutter, and then all the nerds around us will tell you you come talk to me, I'll help you make the bot right now.
Yeah, I have to say, just being in the space, there's so much interesting stuff around that I feel like it's hard not to get sucked into various different things.
Yeah, you know, I came in here as a visual artist to use the wood shop, and they made me a robot maker, you know? They, like, nerd hacked me or nerd sniped me. I think that's a term that's appropriate here, so.
Anything else you think people should know about either the space or about combat robots or about anything else?
Well, we have a stream if you can't make it on our YouTube. Please watch that. And if you build a bot, if you are a bot builder, maybe from a university or another program, just come on down and it's free entry. You register at 5:30 and the event is at 6:30. So we have 1-pound bots and 3-pound bots. So that would be really great to have more people. So please, please come.
Cool. Well, thanks for chatting with me.
Hey, thank you.
That was my conversation with Tarly Guild, the Empress, Queen, creator, and facilitator of Vancouver Combat Robots, which runs the 13th of every month at the Vancouver Hackspace at 1601 Venables Street in East Vancouver. You can find out more about Vancouver Combat Robots by going to Instagram. Vancouver Combat Robots is the tag. Or if you can't make it to the live event, or if you just want to catch up on past ones, they do live stream the whole thing on YouTube. So you can go to youtube.com/@VanCombatRobots. Check it out. 6:30 p.m. Registration starts at 5:30. Hope to see you there. Welcome back to Speak Up on CJSF 90.1 FM Burnaby. I'm Jesse. Thanks for hanging out with me this week and every week. It really means a lot to me that you're out there listening and supporting what we do. Couldn't do this without you, and there would be no point in doing it if you weren't out there. So I really, really appreciate it. Up next, we're going to hear my interview with Spencer Krug, which aired a couple of weeks ago, but I really love this conversation and think it's worth revisiting. Earlier this, well, I guess last week at this point, I found my on-air demo from 2009. And so here at CJSF, in order to get on air, you have to do a bunch of training, and that culminates in producing a demo. And that's just like 10 minutes of fake radio, basically. And I went back and I listened to this demo from 2009, and I sound very young and inexperienced, and it's very cute, I suppose. But the last song I played, it was a song by Sunset Rubdown. And now, 16, 17 years later, here I am interviewing Spencer Krug of Sunset Rubdown. A crazy full circle moment that I am so grateful for and could not happen if it weren't for you out there listening and supporting what I do and what we do. So again, thank you and enjoy this conversation. I imagine every interview you have done for the last few months has focused or at least mentioned Heated Rivalry. And so I don't want to spend the whole duration of our time talking about that, but it's hard not to touch on at least. I can't imagine that you ever could have imagined this specific situation and outcome where I Believe in Anything is featured in an episode of Heated Rivalry and then just blows up. But did you ever think about just like having your music in movies? Like, do you ever daydream about that kind of thing?
I mean, Wolf Parade, Sunset Rubdown, to some small extent my solo stuff. Every so often a sync comes along, which is, say, like a licensing opportunity for a movie or a television show. You know, with Wolf Parade, they're fairly, I'm not going to say common, but it happens on a regular basis. And most of the time, it's just an email and you get a description of the show and how the song is going to be used. You know, there's a pitch and then you sign off on it or you don't, according to, you know, the band talks about it. We feel like if it's going to be a good show and a good opportunity, we say yes. But often enough, that's the last you hear of it. You don't really think about it again. Mm-hmm. Often enough, the show comes and goes without anyone really noticing, or the movie. This one with the heated rivalry thing was obviously a little bit different. When we agreed to it, it seemed like a really fun idea, like a show about gay hockey. Jacob Tierney seemed like he was going to use the song in a really thoughtful way, and he had really put a lot of care and consideration into the way that the song was going to be used, and he was obviously like a fan of the song and the band. So it was all like, seemed like it was going to be really well done and really considerate. So that was rare in and of itself. So we were happy to say yes. And then we didn't really think about it again until the show aired. And then, yeah, everything blew up in a way that we never could have expected. And it just kind of kept snowballing. And eventually we realized, as far as licensing goes, we had kind of hit the jackpot, you mm-hmm. know, kind of won the lottery as far as that goes. It's what bands are always kind of secretly hoping will happen when you license a song, but you don't expect that it actually will. But it's all Jacob Tierney, you know. We just had to say yes, and then he and his team made such a great show. Like I said, just like it's well done, it's well produced. The song was used in a really great way, in a really pivotal scene, and the song was paired with like the emotional content of that scene really well. The song is charged with like hope. Like kind of got this epic vibe, and the scene is the same thing. I think that's how it really resonated with people. I think the show really resonated with people because it's full of like hope and happy endings, and people being actually kind to each other at the end of the day when they have the opportunity to not be kind. And I think the world is craving that right now, and that's why the show did so well, and we were just lucky enough to be asked to have a small part in it, and we just really lucked out, like I said. So yeah, you do sort of daydream about the stuff happening. You don't really expect that it ever will. Mm-hmm. And now it has, and it's really surreal, and we feel really grateful. The song was written 20 years ago, so there is a bit of emotional distance with the content itself, which was added to sort of this surreality of it all. Like, it almost felt like it was happening to a different band or a different person as far as I was concerned, because I wrote and recorded that song over 2 decades ago now. I don't really, like, identify with my 25-year-old self anymore. So sure. It's kind of neat. Like, I kind of thought that song had lived its life, and it's popular with our fans, and we almost always play it live when we do a show. But I didn't think that it had another life to live on top of that until this year. So yeah, like I said, as a band, we're just really grateful. Couldn't have asked for more. It's a great opportunity for us.
It's been really interesting from my perspective here at the radio station. The show comes out, and then all of a sudden, people are what felt like out of nowhere playing I'll Believe in Anything on their radio shows. And, you know, as someone who big fan when that came out and through my college days, it's just really interesting to see sort of a new generation appreciating it and sort of latching onto it in that way.
Yeah, younger kids. It's a treat for us for sure. I mean, I think some of the older hardcore fans are a little bit like in I Told You So kind of mode.
Sure.
I've been listening to this forever, and now these young kids are latching on to it. But
oh, now you like it.
Yeah, exactly. But we don't feel that way at all. We're just like, of course, anyone, come on board. We're happy to have you.
Do you feel any sort of need to cater to that new audience in any way?